welcome to the Survive to Thrive podcast, where we help unlock your curiosity one conversation at a time. My name is Manan Khurana, a lifelong learner focused in the study of psychology, human connections, and entrepreneurship. Survive to Thrive is a community aimed at helping students transition from a state of survival to one of thriving by encouraging curiosity and fostering meaningful conversations as a means of their personal and professional development. Don't just survive, thrive with us. So let's dive in. Break it down. Today's guest describes himself with five core elements. He's a believer, catalyst, empathizer, coach, and optimist. BD School of Business as a lecturer, administrator, and he's on the Alumni Association Board. As a chief motivating officer in his company, Ignite the Dream Consulting, he has coached hundreds of people in life and career from high school to professionals. He's a TEDx speaker, corporate workshop speaker. He has supported and helped over 50 plus nonprofits at the board, advisory, and volunteer level. He's an author to his latest book, Lost and Found. Please welcome this incredible human being, Sam Thiara. How are you, Sam?
Hey, thank you very much. I appreciate the acknowledgements and the introduction.
Sam, if someone has just clicked on this podcast right now, what do you think they'll get out of this?
I think they'll really discover a journey. That the fact is that it is a journey. And, you know, I think oftentimes what people do is they're in the act of just doing. But I think what this may do is actually help people just stop, slow down, reconfigure, reevaluate what they're doing, and then maybe recalibrate and find a positive direction that they really do need to go.
Thank you for sharing that. So I want to talk a little bit about your book, Lost and Found. Why did you choose those three words?
Well, so the title is Lost and Found, Seeking the Past and Finding Myself. Right. And the reason being is, you know, I'm a British-born Canadian, parents that come from Fiji Islands near Australia, and, you know, my grandfathers that come from India. So I was always sort of thinking, where, like, who am I? I'm from everywhere, but I'm also from nowhere. And growing up, it was always really difficult because people often ask, where are you from? So the idea and the inspiration of the book came as a result of this idea that, you know, how can I support and help other people realize their own identity? So if you look at Lost and Found, Seeking the Past and Finding Myself, it's a two-pronged journey. One, it was about finding my identity. But the second part was finding my ancestral roots because nobody knew where it was. So seeking the past, finding myself, I needed to have gone on this journey in order to realize my own personal journey and identity.
Conversation that we had 5 months ago during our first meeting. You mentioned that there's a group of students that aren't being talked about. Mm-hmm. And those are domestic students in a post-secondary institution with immigrant parents. Mm-hmm. And there seems to be a lack of communication between the first-generation Canadian and the immigrant parent themselves. Mm-hmm. How do you think that reading this book would actually help them?
I think that what it does is it opens up the fact that rather than focusing on one or the other, you actually embrace both cultures and you bring them together and within you as well. I mean, you're correct. I mean, what usually we do is we polarize it, or it's in the absolutes where, you know, in a post-secondary institution, we look at, you know, this is a domestic student, this is an international student. And I think what gets lost is that, you know, domestic student with immigrant parents, because, you know, on the one hand, they're trying to fit into the university environment. They're trying to be this individual that's, you know, showcasing that they do belong. And even our international students do belong. Mm-hmm. But equally at the same time, I mean, when they're home, are they speaking in their mother tongue, their mother language, and, you know, and really embracing their cultural background? So the book does provide that avenue of trying to help them realize that, you know, rather than segmenting it, you can embrace them both. And how you might be able to do that is what's within the book as well. Hmm.
You mentioned how 30 minutes before the flight was landing in India, you felt very anxious and it felt like the longest 30 minutes of your life. Mm-hmm. Why do you think you felt that way?
Well, and part of it is, I mean, there's again, two components to that. One part of it is just the fact that when they say the last 30 minutes, it feels like 2 hours because, you know, you're just anxious to get off the plane. I think it was also, for me, it's the first time I'm going to India. I'm a foreigner going to a land that shouldn't be foreign to me and trying to understand and appreciate, like, okay, how am I going to be accepted there, or am I going to be accepted there? Do I need to, you know, focus on, you know, how I'm going to act? What am I going to say? Am I going to do something that may offend? It was all these thoughts and ideas that started coming in those last 30 minutes of saying, you know, it's almost like you've prepared for this, but equally at the same time, it's like the person who's preparing for that marathon race going at the starting line going like, okay, when is the starter pistol going to go off? When do I start? So that last 30 minutes was really a difficult one because now you're questioning, am I doing the right thing? Am I prepared enough? And, you know, how is this journey going to go?
So I'm going to take you through a different scenario, Sam, and I would love to get your input on this. So one of the scenario is, I'm a young Indian student in Canada with immigrant parents, and I feel embarrassed to even open my tiffin in front of my friends in school. I find it difficult to accept my Indian identity, and I also want to be westernized because that's the kind of life that my friends are living. And in this khichdi, as you call it, and I'd love for you to bring it up, I'm having difficulty accepting my Indian side as well as my westernized side. So who am I? Mm-hmm. That's the biggest question.
Yeah. And I growing up here. So for me, again, I moved here from England when I was 4 and living in a community that really didn't have a lot of immigrants. So, you know, you are Canadian. And I think what really transpires in that regard is because I was segmenting and I always said my life was prior to going to India, my life was always viewed as a thali. And a thali is a platter with segmented dishes. And the idea is they're all separated. So in this case, I'm British, Canadian, Fijian, Indian. I also played in an Irish military pipe band. So maybe there's some Irish chutney there too. But I think what transpired in all that is when I stopped looking at my life like a thali, and I started focusing my life on what I call a khichdi. So khichdi is a rice dish where, you know, you have the rice, you pull whatever vegetables you have in the fridge, you add your seasoning and your spices, and it's a blend of flavors. So rather, and I think that's what really resonated with me when I had an epiphany in India that my life is not a thali, my life is khichdi and a blend of cultures. And it really made me, you know, realize that I can actually have them all and celebrate them all as opposed to sort of segmenting and saying, well, I'm with this audience, so I have to be this way. Instead, I'm like, no, I can be all of my background, which is this blend. It's almost like having, you know, we are a watercolor. We're not paint by numbers, meaning everything just blends together. And there's beauty in that because it all holds that we have our uniqueness, we have our diversity, and we have so much that makes up our foundation. Celebrate them all and bring it together and make yourself into a khichdi.
I can feel that there's a person who is Korean, has Korean ethnicity, and they're saying, well, that sounds like bibimbap because that's what it is, right?
Oh, no, it's like bibimbap. It could be an omelet. It could be, you know, pizza, anything. Absolutely. And everything. You just sort of bring it all together.
Wonderful. The next scenario is, Sam, that my immigrant parents want me to be doctors, lawyers, but I like the way John is being treated by Mrs. Walker because Mrs. Walker is really cool. She doesn't put my friend John through all this pressure. Even though my parents are in a Canadian context, they still have their immigrant mentality. Is that wrong? And how do I navigate their expectations? That's the question.
They're not wrong. I think they're trying to use whatever they've got to the best of their abilities to provide you the tools and the resources. The challenge, though, is, you know, I think sometimes that, you know, society puts these pressures. Society says this is what you have to be. It's interesting because success, oftentimes we define success in two ways. There's a third way. And actually, if you embrace the third way, you actually get the other two. So we define success by money and status. But the third one is fulfillment. And the interesting thing is, if you pursue fulfillment, status and money actually come forward because you're doing something that's authentic and unique to you. Now, again, I think for many of the people I mentor and coach, there are conversations where, you know, a person will come up and say, my parents want me to be an engineer, or they want me to be a lawyer or a doctor, but I don't want to be that. So my thing is, what you do though is, but what is the alternative? Rather than just rebelling or saying no, you have to now come up with, what am I going to do? And oftentimes what I tell my students or young professionals is, make this like a research assignment. So let's say you want to be a digital marketer. Your parents want you to be an accountant. Well, then build a PowerPoint presentation and do research and actually do the PowerPoint presentation as a research piece to your parents or their friends and say, this is, do you realize being a digital marketer, here's what it entails. Here's what it involves. Here's how much a digital marketer can make. And do you realize also that, you know, with AI coming in, accounting may become less and less advisable, whereas in digital marketing with creative spaces, there may be more opportunities. And I've had students come back and they're like, oh my gosh, the presentation I did, my parents says that was well thought out and that was well researched and you actually made sense. And, you know, if this is what's important to you, then, and you say it with passion and you say it with purpose, you know, they'll hopefully come on board.
That's wonderful. So what you're saying is, create like an entrepreneurial pitch about yourself. Absolutely. And the career that you want to pursue. Mm-hmm. And I remember you also mentioning that make sure you have a slide for salary, because that's what they're going to be focusing on. Are you going to make money out of this, or is it just passion?
Well, for at least, yes. Absolutely. And, yes. And think of it this way, and this is a true story. I had an individual who wants to be a writer, and it's always been this goal and objective throughout high school. And they got into post-secondary, into the English program in September. By November, they came up and they said, you know what, I think I'm going to drop out of the English program, writing program, and find something else. And my comment back was, but this is what you always talked about. Why? And she said, well, I can't make money at this.
Hmm.
I said, okay, let's have a conversation. Who said this? And when she told me, I said, okay, there's three things I want to talk about. Number one, why is money the most important part here? Like, do you realize if you pursue for money, again, that success of status, money, and fulfillment, the fulfillment's not going to be there. And, you know, if you actually pursue the fulfillment piece, it's going to happen. And fulfillment for you is being in the writing industry. And then I said, when you talked about the writing industry, well, do you realize the writing industry entails, you know, fiction writing, nonfiction writing, editing, publishing, corporate communications, blogging. And I went on and on. And she was just like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize the space was that big.
Mm.
Then I said, the third thing is, the person who says you can't make money at this, do they know anything about the writing industry? And she's like, actually, no. I'm like, why are you listening to them?
Mm.
I'm a writer, but I'm not even going to tell you this. I'm going to connect you to people in that industry. Either they're blogging, either they're in the publishing industry, et cetera. And that person has gone back. And now they've actually pursued something related to writing.
Mm.
And they didn't leave the opportunity. But I think we needed to clarify those three key points.
Mm.
Because it's very easy for somebody to come up and just say, well, you're not going to make money at that. You're not, you know, you shouldn't pursue it. And then you're like, but if you're not prepared and you're just like, okay, I guess I'm going to have to go into something else. I think there is a lot more work that needs to be done internally to justify.
And finding yourself.
Yep.
And one of the key underlying themes from that as well is, who are you asking advice from?
Mm-hmm.
That also matters. Do they have the experience that you're looking for?
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
Well, I often say that, you know, there are, and they aren't saying it to be mean. They aren't saying it to thwart your career. They're just trying to say what's best for you.
Mm-hmm.
I've always said what you need to do, though, is find the champions and enablers, the people who aren't going to say, no, you can't, or no, you shouldn't. They're going to be like, okay, if this is important to you, how do we make this realized? And how do we make this happen? And the champion enabler is there for you.
Going back to the navigating your identity piece, communication with parents is extremely important. And as you said, is make sure you have that PowerPoint presentation. Do you think that sitting down with your parents and asking them about their own story, their own grandparents, and figuring out, okay, why do they think this way? And what are some attributes that they have that I can possibly learn from in a positive way, instead of just thinking of them as, well, they're not first generation like I am,
you know, yeah,
feeling good about yourself. What do you think?
Well, and oftentimes, remember, oftentimes people have come to this country for a better life. Now, oftentimes the parents are doing jobs and tasks that they didn't, that they're not able to do here, that they were doing back in their country. And it's a humbling experience, taxi driving, working as a janitor in a hospital, any number of things. So the idea, though, is respecting where their narrative is and, you know, their hard work ethics or the reasons why they really feel this is what you've got to be. And I think when you acknowledge and respect that, but then it's a matter of these conversations to say, but my grounding or my journey is a carryover from yours. However, it's different than what you accomplished or what you did.
Mm-hmm.
We certainly, like, I think the idea is it's very easy to just write it off and say, well, you're from a different generation, a different culture. It doesn't fit here. It's not it's a round hole and a square peg. But instead, I think what we need to do is open up, ask them their journey and their stories. What did they learn? What did they experience?
Mm-hmm.
And pull that into yourself. So it's almost like you're blending a little bit of their background into you,
mm-hmm.
but really it should be you guiding, or the student should be guiding the conversation,
mm-hmm.
and why this is important to them. And, you know, the successes that they can bring forward that other people have accomplished as a result of pursuing the journey that they're interested in doing.
Don't you think that John, who's watching this right now, is wondering, should ask himself the question, what kind of stories are in his family?
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. And to do it sooner as opposed to later, because as people get older, the stories actually start to evaporate. The memories start to evaporate. Even in my journey with Lost and Found, Seeking the Past and Finding Myself, I found that when I was sitting around with my father, my uncles, you know, part of it is they would reminisce about growing up and, you know, when they were growing up, what it was like. And they would laugh and, you know, just relive the stories. But equally at the same time, what I found is there were a lot of holes that they weren't able to, you know, fill in or explain or express. And I had to make some assumptions. For example, like my grandfather, he left India, Punjab, when he was about 17 in 1905.
Mm-hmm.
And he made his way from with his best friend. I mean, and part of it is it was contrived. Like he made up an argument or did something that, you know, his father got really mad. So it gave him a reason to leave. But his friend and my grandfather wound up going from, you know, landlocked part of Punjab, all the way to Calcutta, hopped on a steamer ship on his way to Argentina, because the cattle ranching he understood was in Argentina.
Mm.
The boat stopped in Australia. Few of the people got off, but my grandfather stayed with his best friend. And the boat landed in Fiji. Now, actually, he got off in Fiji. But this is what I mean. Like, nobody really knows the exact story of why it was Fiji, because he was on his way to Argentina. And there are three assumptions that then I talk about in the book. Is number one, you know, he's coming from a landlocked place, and being on a ship, maybe he just got tired of the sea life and just said, you know what, I've had enough, I'm getting off here. True, legitimate. The second part is maybe he was able to get off the boat for a while, saw Fiji for the paradise it is, and said, oh, this is actually not a bad place. Maybe I should, you know, just make my life here. Or the third one, which is also a legitimate option, is the fact that maybe he got off the ship thinking it's Argentina and the ship is gone and he realized, oh no, it's not Argentina. This is someplace called Fiji. But okay, I guess I got to make my living and make my life here. And but that's what I mean. Like, you know, nobody really knows the reasons. So what I would encourage anybody is talk to the elders. Capture those stories. Capture the memories. You're going to do a couple of things here. Number one is you're going to be appreciating and understanding your own narrative because of the journey that got you to where you are. The second part, though, is respecting your elders and making them feel that what they can contribute to you is equally important. I think sometimes in this fast world, what happens with social media and just the way the world is, we don't slow down enough to have a conversation or talk to each other. Maybe sit down, talk to your grandparents and say, what was life like? What were your experiences like? And then they'd be interested in learning about you as well. And you'd be amazed at what the conversations may unfold.
Going back to your first point, when I read my own grandpa's story, one of the things really stuck out to me, which was that all this happened when he was 16, let's say 15, in eighth grade, right? And reflecting back to my own journey, in 2017, when I was in eighth grade, that's when I moved to Regina, Saskatchewan. And I lived in a boarding school, and I had a good support system who was there for me. I wondered what his support system must have been like, because mom must have been worried that, you know, there are police forces outside. I'm just thinking that he must have had so much trauma to deal with as compared to my life. No way that I'm going to be comparing them, but it gave me a sense of pride, confidence that maybe I am here to do something as well, just like he was at 18 when he moved to a new country. So that made me feel really humble and appreciative of his story.
Absolutely.
How was the experience when you were in India and that photo scene where you were trying to show this picture and someone recognized it for the first time? Describe me that moment. How did that feel?
Yeah, I mean, think of it this way. Going to India to find your ancestral roots with very little information and just a faded photograph, the odds are against you. We had a little bit of an idea, but the name of our village that was given to me was incorrect. So it was a bit of a wild goose chase to some extent. We knew, you know, a couple of things. One is that the district's name, we knew the town, but the name of the village that I understood it to be, somebody said, no, it's this name.
And what was it?
So the district was Hoshiarpur in Punjab. The town of Garshankar is about 6 kilometers or 7 kilometers from our village, and the village name is Chadodi. But somebody said, no, the name of the village is not Chadodi, it's Janodi. And I looked around and I found this place called Jandoli. And it's about 6 miles from Garshankar, which is the town. And I was like, Jandoli, Chadodi, it sounds very similar. I wonder if this is the place. And so you get to Jandoli, you meet people, and you have this anticipation that, am I just reconnecting the past with the present, finding a whole lineage of my ancestors? So there's all of this anticipation. But what we found out through the journey of going to Jandoli is Jandoli, beautiful village, beautiful people, but wrong village. And I was I was disappointed with regards to the fact that I didn't accomplish what I set out to do. And then it's when you go back to just the basics. I said, we know it's Hoshiarpur. We know it's Garshankar. So let's just drive to Garshankar and let's just talk to people. And a lot of people said, well, never heard of Chidori, never heard of it. Until one person says, well, oh no, Chidori is up the road this way. So you get that, but you're now guarded and you're no longer sort of this anticipation. You're like, you're bracing yourself for another setback.
Hmm.
And then, you know, we got to the area that we thought was Chidori, and, you know, there's an old man sitting there by the gate, and, you know, we asked him, you know, is this Chidori? He says, yes, this is Chidori. And we're like, okay, but he's still very guarded, because you're like, okay, but just because we found Chidori, and number one, is this really our village? And number two, but do we know anybody here? Hmm. And, you know, we showed him the picture and he said, well, I don't know about the house because that's changed. But there's this one person in the back and it's very faded. He says, I think I know who this is. And I'm looking at this going, this gentleman is like 90 years old, no glasses. And the picture is very faded.
Hmm.
I can't even really make out this person. I mean, I'm like, okay, here we go again. And, you know, he took us to a house. People came out. They, you know, were wondering what's going on. He showed them the picture. They looked at the picture. And all of a sudden, this one woman said, wait, that's me in the picture.
Hmm.
Who are you? And all of a sudden, I was like, what do you mean you're in the picture? She goes, well, this is me. And, you know, it took a moment and then we both looked at each other and then I had to tell who I was and who my grandfather was. And now I'm standing. And when she realized who I was, she said, no, you're home. This is your grandfather's home.
Mm.
This is where he left from. And that realization of how I've reconnected the past with the present. And because nobody in my family, my parents, my aunts and uncles, knew where this village was.
Mm.
They had heard about it, but nobody had really found this village, except one of my dad's older brother who passed away had this picture, and that's all I had to go by.
Mm.
So it's quite the epic journey.
Mm.
And the fact that you accomplish what you set out to do,
mm-hmm.
and it worked out, but that's why it is lost and found, seeking the past and finding myself, because the village was lost and I was able to find it.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, there was purpose. And I had Ziploc bags with me in the hopes that I could find the village. And when the village was found, I went out into the field, scooped up dirt, put it into the Ziploc bag. And then I gave this dirt to my father, my aunts and uncles, as a memento that this is to reconnect us back to our own roots.
Mm-hmm.
Our ancestors, the dirt, which I still hold.
Where's that dirt? Where's that soil?
So it's been distributed to various family members, okay. But equally in my house, when I'm sitting at my desk, it sits right behind me. It's also sitting by our fireplace in a separate container as well. But I also told my father, you know, that it's one of those things of, you know, when you pass away, and he did just this last November. I'm going to put some of this dirt in the coffin. So when the cremation happens, you have a little piece of that history, family history with you, whatever happens after the cremation.
Mm-hmm.
So just the idea that that's what the purpose I had was the soil was something that really grounded us to our village.
So I asked my grandparents the same question was, did you ever get a chance to go back to the village? Do you know what the answer was?
I'm pretty sure the answer is not yet or no, because it's in Pakistan.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's exactly what their answer was. They said that Indians can't go to Pakistan, Pakistanis can't come to India. And when I heard that, I felt like there are so many millions of stories that are just going to fade away because of the visa issues.
Yeah.
And that made me really sad for a bit, that my grandpa would never be able to go to Pakistan, the village where his dad was raised, and have the opportunity to touch that soil and bring it back home with him.
Yeah.
So it's incredible what you have achieved. I mean, on many levels, right? Yeah.
No, and it is sad. And it's unfortunate, the fact that I always say, and I use it in this term, that the actions of a few result in the consequences of the many.
Mm.
I think that there's a lot of people from India who'd love to go to Pakistan to experience and find their roots. But there's also a lot of Pakistanis that would love to come back to India and just re-experience. And I think I always say, unfortunately, time should heal.
Mm.
But unfortunately, time hasn't healed at this point. I think the average person would embrace and appreciate the opportunity of, you know, rediscovering their past.
Mm.
There's a lot of scars. There's a lot of pain on both sides, actually. But there's a lot of pain and anger and frustration. Mm-hmm. But I think once you ease up and humankind takes over and kindness takes over, I think that things can actually be resolved quite easily.
It also makes me think about North Korea and South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
How many of those families were just
separated?
Well, and yeah,
Palestine,
100%,
and Israel. It's happened over and over and over again.
Hmm. Bringing the conversation back to international students, the question is, how do they find their own identity?
Mm-hmm.
How do they navigate the complexities of identity and belonging in a new country? Drawing from your own personal journey documented in the book, what tips do you have?
Yeah. I think what happens, though, is even domestic students struggle with identity. I think what happens is we're always trying to define ourselves by what we do, but actually you're defined by who you are. And I think when you start taking the time to realize who you are, clarity starts to emerge. What I often tell people is, what are the, you know, foundations that make up who you are? If you think about it, what is it that you're not willing to compromise?
Mm.
And it doesn't matter if you're an international student or a domestic student. What are you not willing to compromise? What's so important to you? So for me, the five things I'm not willing to compromise in life and career: servant leadership, story sharing, activator igniter, champion enabler, and a creative collaborator. I'm working on multiple projects right now. All of them hit 5 out of 5. And it's like I have a really solid footing and an understanding of who I am. And that's where opportunities, when they emerge, I've got clarity. So if you're a domestic student, if you're an international student, start focusing and looking at, you know, who you are. And the way that you come up with the grounding, the five core elements piece, is look at the classes you're taking in high school or in university or college. What did you like about them? What is it that they, what courses did not resonate? But ask yourself why. If you have a job, what do you like about the jobs? What do you not like about the job? Ask yourself why. What do you like to do in your spare time? And ask yourself why. The idea is, what you really want to do is start gathering and coming up with five core elements or foundation. This is your anchor point. Now, people may think, well, isn't that better in the future? And I'm like, no, you do this now. And if you're in post-secondary, you do this now. And maybe the first job out of university hits 1 out of 5. Don't quit the job. But here's the thing. Now you know what's missing. And the idea is, can you maybe embrace the 2nd out of 5, the 3rd out of 5? Maybe you can do a course because you know this is what's important to you. And then bring that in, and that becomes number 2 out of 5. But when you hit 5 out of 5, you don't have a job or career, you have fulfillment. Now, what people may worry about is, yeah, but you're making me pick 5 things. What if they're not the right words? What if they're not the right things? You're going to be changing this throughout your life. I have changed mine over the years. As you grow as an individual, as you have these experiences as an individual, these will change. So the idea, though, is, but what's your anchor point? Now, I've worked with many people. And for example, you know, oftentimes when I ask this question, tell me something you're not willing to compromise, people would be like, well, family's really important to me. I'm like, okay, why is family important? And they say, they'll go down a pathway. But the words that come back are, well, the connectedness and the relationships that I have are really important to me. So I go back and I say, well, you use the word relationships and connectedness. Could that be one of your five instead of family? Because family is a little bit more confined. But relationships and connectedness means, you know, does that apply to your work environment? Does it work? Does that apply to your school environment, your social life? And oftentimes people are saying, absolutely. So maybe those relationships and connectedness becomes one of your five. It's also about have fun with this. Like, I was working with somebody in Los Angeles, and, you know, we were working through this exercise of the five core elements. And she said, one thing that's really important to her is the environment. And, you know, she wants to contribute to making sure she's not a bystander, and she wants to, you know, be really concerned about the environment. And we were talking back and forth, and I just said, so you're an environmental ninja. She was like, actually, I really like that. That's a good way for me to describe myself. So she's an environmental ninja. So it becomes a foundation. Let me share with you the fact that, you know, we're not defined by what we do. We're defined by who we are. And oftentimes people say, well, either if I do a podcast or, you know, in a situation where we start talking, well, tell me, who is Sam? Here's how I describe myself. I'm an individual who's guided by five core elements: servant leadership, story sharing, activator igniter, champion enabler, and a creative collaborator. Those five things have enabled me to help individuals, teams, and organizations to their pinnacle best. But you know what? It's also made me into a speaker and a storyteller, a mentor and a coach, a writer, blogger, and a screenwriter, an entrepreneur, an educator, a problem solver, and a community activator. Now, that's a strong statement. I haven't told you what I do, but that's really become an anchor point. And now people are like, actually, that's a really cool way to describe yourself. Can you tell me more about, you know, you said you're a speaker and a storyteller. What does that mean? Now I go into this conversation. So it's about making that statement.
Finding those five core elements. Mm-hmm. And we've also had this conversation before, where I am also on that journey to find my own core elements. I feel like there is a question that needs to be asked. Mm-hmm. What is servant leadership? What does that mean?
Yep. Servant leadership is, you know, when you really don't care who gets credit for what needs to be done, but there's a problem, you need a solution, you roll up your sleeves, things get done. So you're not worried or concerned about the accolades. You're not concerned about who gets credit for it. Servant leadership is a term where you just dedicate yourself to contributing back to society. I've dedicated myself to say, I am not going to be a bystander in life. I'm going to be an activator, and I'm going to go in and, you know, if there's a problem, I'm going to sort out and help people.
Mm.
I mean, I get anywhere from 3 to 8 conversations per week on people who want me to help them, you know, have a conversation about their own journey. I don't turn them down, you know, and that's servant leadership, because, you know, it's important for them to talk to somebody about their journey. And, you know, if I was to say, well, I'm too busy, or it's not that, you know, I can do this. No. We find a mutually convenient time. And today alone, I've got 2 requests. People said, could we meet in the future when it's convenient? So like now, I always look for an opportunity. So if I say, okay, I'm going to be downtown on this particular day, does this work? And they're like, yeah, I'll meet you 10:30 on this date. But then if 2 or 3 other people want to meet up, I said, well, I'm going to be downtown on this date. Could you come and meet me downtown?
Mm-hmm.
And if they say, yeah, then I've already started lining up, and I can do 3 in a quick succession. But the idea, though, is the fact that, you know, there's so much that needs to be done in this world. And rather than focusing just on a problem, I want to focus on solutions. I want to help people in their journey.
The point that you brought up also connects with forming a mentor-mentee relationship. Mm-hmm. And everybody can be a mentor, I think, especially if you have experience. And taking that time out for future mentees and mentees in general, someone who wants to learn, gives them, it helps them so much more than you can even imagine. So those conversations that you're having with hundreds of other mentees, official and unofficial, helps them. And fortunately, I get to be one of those mentees. So thank you. Just want to say thank you.
Appreciate that.
Yeah. One of the things, part of my research behind, before I wanted to have this podcast, was really go to students, survey them, and ask them, what do they want to know more about? And here are some of the questions that came up.
Okay.
Sam, I am lonely. I don't have any friends. Mm-hmm. I don't have a support system. The thing that scares me the most on a survey is when it says, write down your emergency contact, because I have to think, who is my emergency contact? And sometimes for some people like myself, there is none. So how do I make friends?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, unfortunately, what happens at times is the fact that we're challenged, or we feel challenged of, how do I get into a conversation? And if you're an international student, oftentimes it may, and this happens a lot, is, what if I say the wrong thing? Or, you know, my level of English is not as great as somebody who's a domestic. And then they hold back. And because they're holding back, they're not really building out those relationships that they need to. Oftentimes I say, okay, the domestic student, how many languages do they speak? And they speak, well, one. I said, how many languages do you speak? And I've had anywhere from 2 to 6. So what I'm saying, so you've got 2 to 6, and this person has 1. Why are you holding yourself back? Then they're like, oh, I never thought of that. And here's the other thing. I said, you know, if, let's say you and I are having a conversation, you're an international student, and you're really sort of not sure if you're saying the right thing. Okay. And let's say you're in that conversation and you say something wrong. I said, to that person that you've said something that was maybe wrong, do they go home and they talk about you and they say, look, this person said this, can you believe it? I said, I don't mean this in the worst sense. I don't mean this in the wrong way. But you're no one's priority. You're your own priority. That person is not going to go home and talk to you, talk about you to their family or to their friends, because they've already forgotten about you, or that what you said. More other things have come onto their life. So don't hold back. And the other thing is the art of conversation. I think people worry too much about, well, how do I engage in a conversation? I get people coming, you know, either to my office or saying, look, I've got to get to an event. I'm not sure how I can get into a conversation. It's awkward. And I said, well, here's the thing. If I come to your house for dinner, knock on the door, is the very first thing you're going to say when you open the door is, you know, Sam, what are some of the straightforward and easy things that I should be able to do as an international student that could open doors for me in building out these relationships? Is that the first thing you say? Because if that's the first thing you say, I'll be like, I'm actually going to go and, you know, to the fast food place over here.
Going to go to Kathy's house.
Yeah. <next door. laughs> I think instead what it is simple. Well, how are you doing? Oh, well, how was the drive today? I think don't overthink the conversation piece. I always say, ask the first questions, make them very simple, listen, and then add into the conversation as they're talking. Because if, let's say you get to an event and you're at a post-secondary institution and you're at an event and somebody's standing there and you walk up and you say, oh, you know, welcome. Think of it as you're the host. This is your school, that event. And then you say, well, welcome to the event. Now, are you an alumni of the school? And if they say yes, you're like, oh, well, what program did you do? Let them talk and you listen to it. If they say, no, I went to this other school. Oh, well, what was your experience like? And then I've also been at events where people are huddled together in their comfort circles. And I see an individual standing there all by themselves. And I walk up and I say, oh, welcome to the event. And they're like, oh, well, thank you. And I said, you know, it's so happy to see a professional at this event. You know, what brought you to the event? And they're like, oh, well, I'm the keynote speaker. And I'm looking around the room going like, all of you had this opportunity to come and talk to the keynote speaker.
Absolutely.
So embrace it. And, you know, just realize that this person is here like anyone else. Just ask a simple question and get into that engaging conversation. Now, the funny thing is people said, yeah, but also, like, How do I disengage? I'm like, at a certain point in time, when there's a natural break, say, you know, I just got to step away, but I just wanted to say thank you for today. I really enjoyed my conversation with you. I hope that we can connect. Simple as that. And then you can disengage. Don't make it complicated. It's not supposed to be complicated.
Don't overthink it. Absolutely. One of the things that I really liked that you said was about how people care too much about themselves. And that is what's going to stop you from taking that next step, having that conversation.
Or care about yourself. But also realize that when you care about yourself, that other person, they've got so many things happening in their life, you're not their priority.
I was sitting at a restaurant and eating by myself. I see these two international students from India, and we just started having a conversation. During our conversation, they asked me about, well, how many friends do you have? That's the I kind of laughed. I was like, well, I don't think about it on a daily basis, but I understand from their perspective, they must be wondering, how do you make friends, right? I asked them the question, well, have you had a chat with someone lately in your school? And then the question, the answer is always, no, I want the other person to have a chat with me. So you're basically blocking yourself from that opportunity, and you're in those groups again and again and again. So you never really get to explore, which is why I completely agree with you on that.
Yeah. No, and you know, I always say a lot of our interactions become transactional. Make it transformational. Like when you go to the grocery store and you come up to the cashier, hi, how are you? Good. How about you? Good. And then they proceed. Or you go to a coffee shop. Hi, how are you? Great. How are you? Good. What would you like? Me, I try to engage in a conversation. I was in Toronto a few years back with about 20 of my students at an academic competition. And, you know, it was late at night, about 10 o'clock at night. We're hungry. So, you know, we were walking along, and there was a Chipotle's, and we walked in. I was the first one in, maybe because I was the most hungriest, but we walked in.
Okay.
And I'm the first in line. And the lady looked at me and she goes, what would you like? And she pointed to the menu above. And I looked at her name tag, and her name was Mary. I said, oh, okay, Mary. She goes, oh, yeah. I go, I eat everything. What would Mary make for herself?
Love it.
And she looked at me and she goes, are you sure? And I said, yeah, what would you like? Yeah. What would you eat? What do you recommend? And she goes, oh. And then she said, okay. So she goes over and she pulls out the burrito. And she said, well, do you want brown beans or black beans? I said, Mary, which beans do you eat? She goes, well, black. I said, okay, give me the black beans. And if you ask me one more time, I'm coming on the other side of the counter and I'm going to make my own burrito. Right. She starts laughing.
Yeah.
And my students are all like, what's going on here? It's going along the line. And now she's just adding stuff to it. And she yells to the cashier, I'm comping this guy's guacamole because that's what I would put in my burrito. And the cashier's now laughing. And I don't do this to get free guacamole, but that's what happened. And, you know, she's made it in such a big burrito, she can't close it. So she's trying to close it. It's not closing. She winds up, the cashier says, here, let me help. So the cashier's now helping and can't close it. The manager comes in and says, you know what? Let me see if I can do this. Nobody can close this giant burrito now. And I just said, Mary, you know what? Just give me a spoon and give me the open-faced burrito and we're all cool. And she looked at me. And then I paid for my burrito. But it's what she said at the end. She goes, man, that was fun. We all have a chance to do these little things that are transformational, not transactional. But that's how you get into these conversations. And I've had so many conversations that just sparked, that's resulted in a LinkedIn connection, which has become a longtime friend.
Wonderful. I have two more stories to share with that. I love what you said about just going to a restaurant and having a chat with someone. The first story is, I am working at an oxygen studio, a yoga studio right now. And I love when people ask me what my name is, because not a lot of people do that. So I make it a habit to, whenever I'm in a restaurant, just asking people their names also matters, because it gives them a sense of belonging, that they matter. And the second story to that is, when I first came to Vancouver in 2022, and I moved to a new part around Maine, there was this Korean restaurant that I went to on Fraser. I went there, it was 2 p.m. I was, I think, one of the only customers there. And they asked me what I want. I ordered and I just sat and started eating. Then I looked behind me and the people who were serving me, the staff, they're having their own lunch, right? So something inside of me sparked and said, "Go say hi to them." And I was like, no. Why would I do that? I'm just a random Indian kid sitting in, they'll think I'm weird. And I didn't listen to that. I listened to my gut and I actually went and said hi. There was four people, Han, the different countries. They were from Korea, Japan, Indonesia. And I'm friends with them now. Every time I go to them, I say hi, and they're always waiting for me to come in. And it's just, you just have to say hi. It's sometimes it's really that simple, isn't it?
It is. A smile goes a long way.
100%. 100%. So that's how do you communicate with the friends? Now I want to touch on another topic, which is how do I communicate with the family that's back home? And guilt that comes with it, because I want to go and explore Whistler for 2 days and I want to spend money on myself. But there's always a sense of guilt that I have come to this country. Everybody's depending on me. I can't really have fun. But then there's also a small part of you that dies inside because you never really get to explore yourself. It's a very nuanced question, I understand. But what would you say to a student like that?
Okay, there are three words that I use in unison. The three words: explore, experience, embrace. Explore is this idea of going forward with curiosity. Because if you live in a bubble, that's all you're going to know about this world is understanding the bubble. If you explore, you don't know the experiences you're going to encounter, the people you're going to meet, the stories and the memories that you're going to create. So that's the explore. Experience means rather than being a bystander, immerse yourself. By immersing yourself, again, the relationships, the stories and things start to mature and you can add purpose and meaning to it. And embrace is the last word, which embrace just basically means really pulling it in. But embrace means, but what am I gaining from this? What am I learning from this? So rather than feeling a sense of guilt, think of it as you're filling this cauldron, this cylinder, with experiences and stories that are actually going to expand who you are as an individual. Now, if you only sort of sit back and the guilt comes in that I can't have a good time and all of that, you're going to have a limited experience, limited exposure to people, and you're not going to be that happy. And it's just a small bubble. But when you expand the bubble, now you're building out those relationships, the opportunities emerge, your presence grows. And as a result, if you're having fun, and the way I describe it is I've been teaching this organizational behavior class at SFU for many years now. Still thoroughly enjoy it. And I always say, if I enjoy teaching this class, my students are really going to enjoy this class, hopefully. But they are. And the reason being is because I'm enjoying it. It's not that it's feeling like work. The same thing applies. Don't feel guilt about this. It actually go experience. So, explore, experience, and embrace are three words that I think are so critical in your personal and professional development. Because it's really going to help your presence, and people will acknowledge and see you as an individual, as opposed to just being in that bubble and feeling guilty.
Treating yourself, self-care, all those aspects.
Absolutely. But also, always be reflective, like these experiences, what does it mean? How is this going to help me in the future? Those sorts of things are really important.
And also the fact that you're living alone, so you're always you there's always this flight or fight instinct, but sometimes it's just important to get out and have fun. Just be a little kid again.
Absolutely. And equally at the same time, the fight or flight, it's actually really difficult if you're only by yourself and you've got that small bubble because there is no one there to support you or that you're able to build that foundation with. The more you explore, you know, like I said, the, you know, explore, experience, and embrace, the more people are there to support you. So you're not fighting anymore, you know, fight or flight, because now you have a support system around you.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. I didn't think about it that way, but definitely. When international students come to this country, I want to focus on the ones who are struggling right now. And the ones who are struggling right now are only asking the question, we're watching this, they're asking, well, this is all the fancy stuff. Tell me, how am I going to get a job? How do I get paid? How do I land my first job? And my question to you is, how do they leverage their unique backgrounds to create a compelling personal brand or a personal story in the Canadian job market?
Right. I think a huge component of it is self-confidence, is to realize what makes me unique and distinct. I think sometimes we get caught up in our day-to-day activities. We feel average. We don't really understand or appreciate what the significance we can bring forward. But it is about the foundation piece, really understanding who you are. And then it's almost like then building on that as your presence and starting to reach out, building those relationships on LinkedIn, for example, attending events, talking to people, building out your presence, and doing it with earnest, but also doing it with authenticity. So when I go to these events, it's not about, well, who am I going to meet and how many business cards am I going to collect? What opportunities am I going to get? I just go out, have conversations with people and ask questions. And next thing you know, people are like, oh my gosh, like, you know, I really enjoyed this conversation. Like, can we connect on LinkedIn? And I'm like, absolutely. So there's a lot of work that an individual can do. So build out your LinkedIn profile, attend events and, you know, immerse yourself in it and actually start talking to people, building this presence, because that presence starts to grow. And then again, when you have those opportunities that are there, the more that you, and I think extracurricular activities, joining clubs or, you know, those sorts of things can be hugely beneficial. Equally at the same time, I mean, if you're doing a class and you do a group project, don't just think, okay, the group project is now done and I'm going to move on to the next semester. No, now reflect, what did I gain and learn from it? Build a portfolio of your experiences, because if you worked on a group assignment, well, there's analytical skills, communication skills, team building skills. So when that person in the, you know, interview says, well, tell me about a time when you had to work in a difficult situation, time pressure. Oh, well, let me tell you, I had four classes. There were exams coming up. We still had, you know, the four individuals we had to organize and we had to work together to solve a case and then deliver the case and as consultants. And here's the processes we now had. Well, those are transferable skills. So, you know, you need to become more visible. And part of it is having a LinkedIn profile. But I also get, like, when you first start out, it's like, well, what am I going to write? I don't have much. Get involved. Volunteer somewhere. Join a club. Start those nonprofit or those volunteer extracurricular activities are what I call transferable skills. And even on your resume, what I would say is, rather than separating it as work experience and education and whatnot, change the work experience to relevant experience. And then bring the volunteer work, the club activities, because it's relevant. You're not misleading the employer. It's relevant experiences. And then expand and explain what these mean. But it's not a matter of just joining a club, saying, okay, I've joined a club and that's great, or volunteering at a reception desk at a volunteer. No, start getting involved. Like, you know, I always say you can be 10 miles wide, 1 inch deep. But what employers are really looking for is for you to be 1 inch wide, 10 miles deep. Like,
yeah,
you know, get involved in the club, you know, I'm the faculty advisor for a club up at SFU, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody comes in as, you know, an entry level, you know, project coordinator. Maybe the next year they become the project manager. Next year they're on the exec team. Maybe fourth year you're now the president. But now you're connecting with people external to SFU, internal to SFU, and you're expanding your network and relationships.
Mm. Yeah. And this is also important because a lot of students, I call them students, but they could also be in their mid-30s. They already have experience. And suddenly when they come to this country, they're told they don't have any experience. So they've got to start from scratch. So this is also important for them, is to take action and not always feel pissed that nobody's listening to me. But this should be an experience for them to go back and find.
Well, and the word I would use here is confidence.
Mm.
Understand that what you bring forward, you've gained, you've earned, don't diminish it. Mm. And I get people all the time like saying, oh, no, not me. I mean, that was just a little thing I did there. No, don't diminish it. Really talk about what did it mean to you? How important was this? And expand, explain it, and really showcase it. I think we need to celebrate ourselves more. And it becomes a challenge because I think what happens is people will be like, it sounds like I'm bragging, but there's a difference between confidence and cockiness.
Okay.
So always make sure it's on the confidence level to say, you know, we worked as a team, or I was able to accomplish this, but what it brought me was this insight, and here's how it helped more people. Mm. So you're saying it from the standpoint of more of a confident level than to say, I was the one who founded this. If it wasn't for me, then, you know, this wouldn't be here today and all of that. Speak with a confident voice, not a cocky voice.
I really like that as well, because this also touches a little bit of Eastern background, Eastern philosophy of not putting yourself out there, not having the confidence because you want to be humble. So how do you be confident and humble, which is what you just said, is the way that you present those skills.
Really well, and if you build a presence, oftentimes you don't even have to say a word because your presence carries volume. Like, I don't know, I've been at events where somebody's walked into the room, they haven't said a word, but there's something about them that just, you know, there's some confidence here. So I call it being loud without a voice.
Mm.
And you can be, especially if you're an introvert, you can be loud without a voice. Meaning, you know, if you have the ability to build the skills and abilities, the confidence, that's going to speak volumes. And you don't have to go around telling people. They're going to see this and they're going to understand. Mm. Oh, well, who's that? Actually, there's a little story I share. It's called the teacup story. And I use this in my class.
Okay.
And I save it for the last lecture. The idea is, you know, people are afraid of the, you know, how do I make an impact? How do I showcase who I am? And it's the little things that actually make the biggest impact. Now, I'm not saying don't do the big things. Absolutely go for the big things. But it's the small things that make an impact. And I had a group of students that went down to Washington State for an academic competition. So think of it as, you know, there are students from all around the world at this academic competition. Part of what they organized was, you know, they got to speak with the senior people at JP Morgan. So now you have, you know, 100, you know, students who are, you know, there for the competition, the organizers and volunteers, you got coaches, and they're all here to meet the senior people of JP Morgan. So, you know, if they had their conversations, you know, the coffee, tea, and some snacks. And at the end of it all, everyone just said their goodbyes and the room vacated.
Mm.
My coach came back and he saw the senior most person there. So they started a conversation. So there's only the senior most person and my coach. While they're talking, my coach recognized that while they're talking, the senior most person is picking up these cups and saucers while they're talking and putting it on the sideboard.
Mm.
And eventually my coach said, you know, you must be a really busy person. He says, no. And the senior most person said, absolutely. Yeah, I got a lot to do. And, you know, it's busy and I like to keep busy. He said, but, you know, you're picking up those cups and saucers and moving it over there. There's people here who will clean up. He goes, yeah, yeah, there are people who will clean up. But he said, I wouldn't leave this for someone to clean up after me at home.
Mm.
Why would I have someone clean up after me when I should be doing that? That's my responsibility. But the more important thing he said is, I had a room full of 100 young people in this space. If one of them would have picked up their cup and saucer and moved it to the sideboard, I want to talk to that student because they're doing something different. Now, when I tell that story, I tell the students, but now you don't get to an event and you grab your cup and saucer and say, look, I'm going to put this on the sideboard. I'm looking for work. And I hope you sort of, oops, my resume just dropped on the floor. Mm. You don't do that.
Mm.
But just quietly creating that presence of responsibility. One of the things that I do every morning after I wake up, the first thing I do is I make my bed. And that's, again, something I've accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little thing. And, you know, it may not mean a lot to many people, but to me, that's the first thing I have to do when I wake up is make my bed. Moving your cup and saucer to the sideboard. You know, these little things are what people will observe. And they're like, okay, that person's doing something different.
Adding on to that, great story. I think it's the first time that I've heard it.
Okay.
And yeah, I'm not going to go and put teacups on the side.
Or say, you'll do it, but you're not going to say,
yes,
I'm going to do this because I'm looking for a job.
Absolutely, you're right. In a podcast that I was watching, hosted by Ali Abdaal, a question came up, which is, successful people have successful systems that make them successful. Or sorry, successful people have good systems that makes them successful. And that's one of the systems that I'm guessing you have, which is, you get up in the morning, you make your bed.
Mm-hmm.
That's the basic thing you can do.
Mm-hmm.
What are some other systems that students can adopt in their daily lives?
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I think for them is it has to be tailored to them.
Mm.
In other words, you can't just do things that don't resonate. But whatever it is, make it into a habit, a good habit. You know, it could be that I'm going to work out, you know, 3 days a week. Okay. But make sure you adhere to that. So, you know, you create a habit. And as a result of that habit, that's something that, again, adds into your presence, you know, and it could be any number of things. It could be, you know, I want to meet 3 new people every week. Okay? Now, by Friday, has that happened? If not, well, what are you going to do about that? If you haven't, don't beat yourself up. But now, how can you, you know, embrace that to say, okay, here's where it didn't work. How can I make it work? You know, and it doesn't mean that, okay, I only spoke one person. Next week, I now have to do 5. No, that's just putting too much pressure on yourself.
Right.
Don't do that. But consistency, I think, is one of the elements that is really important to do in all this, is consistency to say, no, this is important to me. I want to do this, and then follow through with it.
Yeah, that's also important.
But also that $100 or $200 that you've set aside to have fun, you know, part of that may be, you know, that will be a catalyst that builds those relationships, you know, like having dinner with a couple of people and you run into someone else that has come into the conversation, or I'm going to spend, you know, $35 to get to this event, and you get to the event, or, you know, joining the Vancouver Board of Trade Leaders of Tomorrow program.
100%.
There's a cost affiliated or associated with that, which some people would look at and they're like, well, that's, yeah, no, I'd rather not. What they miss though is it's an investment of that, you know, money that you're putting into the Leaders of Tomorrow program. It's an investment which could pay dividends, rather than saying, well, you know, if I spend it there, then that's less money for me to eat out. But this is a really good investment.
100%. And international student doesn't have a network here. It really matters where you spend your money.
Yep.
And spending your or joining a subscription of, let's say, Leaders of Tomorrow program is beneficial, because then you're getting an access to these incredible human beings.
Absolutely.
Who are just there. Yeah. Sam, I think we should take a pause here. And then continue our conversation sometime in the future, because I think there's a lot of insights here that domestic students and post-secondary students can take away from. But I know that there's a lot more that I want to discuss with you, and really happy that you're here today.
No, I appreciate that. And I think a pause is always good. Like, you know, it's a marathon, and a marathon means that at some time as well, you know, it's good to just, you know, get the water break and reflect on as you're running and as you're doing things and see where this moves forward. And, you know, you'll come up with maybe even more questions or even more reflections, and I'll be prepared to, you know, focus on those as well. Wonderful. But it's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, Sam. Really appreciate you. Lost and Found, please go check it out. Thank you for your time.
All right.